My name is Renee Martinez. I am 49 years old. Today is March 12, 2010, and we're in East Los Angeles, and I am interviewing my mother, Barbara.
My name is Barbara Doors Martinez. I am 76 years old. Today is March 12, 2010, and we are in East Los Angeles, and I am being interviewed by my daughter, Renee.
Okay. As I told you before, I thought one of the things that I would ask you a little about is just sort of kind of your journey from where you started in the East Coast in New York, upstate New York, in Lewiston, and then how you moved to later. I know you did a short stint in Seattle, but then how in your teens you spent time in Hawaii and then came to California to go to university.
Yes.
And you met Dad. And I just kind of wanted to follow what that was like for you in terms of where you originally grew up and the kind of diversity and how things changed, and then also in marrying Dad and coming into a Mexican-American culture. So you want to describe a little bit about Lewiston and where you grew up? And where it is, I didn't say.
Yes. Yes. I was actually born in Niagara Falls, New York, but grew up in a small town named Lewiston on the Niagara River. My dad was a mechanical engineer, and he worked for the Carborundum Company in Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. And I was just growing up in this wonderful small-town environment in the late 30s and the 40s. We lived on the Niagara River and spent all our summers swimming in the river.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, your grandpa, used to race beautiful 8-meter sailboats on Lake Ontario, and of course we had we went ice skating in the winter on the frozen pond and sledding and all those things you do.
Winter Olympics
in those small towns in western New York. My dad joined the Navy during World War II. He was sent to the Bronx for officer training, and then he was stationed in Seattleton at the Bremerton Shipyard. My parents split up during that period, and then while he was there, that's when he met Vi.
And then he remarried.
Your
yeah.
Tutu.
Yeah.
And they were married. And then he was discharged in 1945. The war was over. Everyone was coming home. And so he came home, and your Uncle Herb, who's 4 years older than I, and your grandpa and Vi, my new stepmother, left New York. She and I, January 1st, took the train across Canada stopped in Edmonton to visit Auntie Katie, who used to curl,
goodness.
We all know what curling is. lived on the river there. I remember seeing, it was, you know, cold, cold winter time, beautiful trip across Canada, and I remember seeing men taking ice out of the river there before you could see it from Auntie Katie's house,
mm-hmm.
that they were harvesting ice because people still had
ice boxes.
Yeah. Anyway, we went on to Seattle. I was in the seventh grade, and so I went to a semester of seventh grade at a junior high school there. I remember walking to and from school in the drizzle a lot. Your grandpa had thought about working for Boeing in Seattle, but he had also been stationed in Hawaii, and he just fell in love with Hawaii.
Now, it wasn't a state yet.
No, it was not. It wasn't
US
a
territory.
State until after I was married, I think.
Oh, okay.
So it was territory.
Yeah.
So that spring, while we were in Seattle, he went to Hawaii. He had already made job contacts while he was there. And he was the chief engineer for Libby, their pineapple cannery.
The Dole.
And there were two canneries then, Dole and Libby McNeil and Libby. So when school got out, your Uncle Herb and I and Vi got on the Matsonia.
Because you had
the
to take a boat,
ships,
right?
Yeah.
You couldn't take. There was no plane.
And had a wonderful ocean journey to Hawaii.
Well, so let me ask you, though, and going back to what was, like, the makeup, like, the ethnic makeup of Lewiston? I've never asked you. Was it pretty much white?
Yes. Yes. And I remember there was one black man who lived, had a small cabin down on the river,
mm-hmm.
older man. But other than that, it was just white.
Now, I mean, your background, as you know, but I'll go ahead and say this, is that you have ancestors that were here since colonial British times, you know, at least on Grandpa's side, right, in mm-hmm. Rhode Island and mm-hmm. Massachusetts Bay Colony.
And actually on Grandma's side, too, 1700s.
And from England?
Yes.
England.
So maybe some Irish there, but mostly English,
So, when you went to, I don't know much about what Seattle was like then. It was a short stint there, and certainly mm-hmm. Hawaii. Can you talk about what, that must have been just a huge change on so many levels, mm-hmm. obviously, weather.
Well,
maybe you're talking about the fruit.
And actually, you know, speaking of meeting different people, this junior high school that I went to was a city school, so mm-hmm. it was a pretty big school. And, of course, a school in Lewiston went from kindergarten through 12th grade.
So it was almost like a one.
And we walked home for lunch, you know, and came back for the rest of the school day. But, you know, Seattle was a city school. And I remember meeting Asian American people that I'd never even seen before. Of course, this was wartime, or right after the war, so they were Chinese American. And there were some black students at the high school, too.
Mm-hmm. Because Seattle actually has a fairly large black population.
And actually, when we would go visit my grandmother in Buffalo when I still lived in western New York, we would occasionally see black people, you know, as we were driving through the city, but not in Lewiston, right. other than this very nice, friendly man who lived down on the side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Seattle was different because there were many different people.
Right. And it was an urban setting, which was different for you also.
Yes. Then we moved to Hawaii, and of course, my goodness, I was in the minority.
Yeah.
But just this wonderful melting pot of people.
Uh-huh.
We lived, when we first got there, on the windward side of Oahu,
mm-hmm.
on the beach, and I went to a small school in Kailua.
It was a public school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, the public school system was divided up. They had an English standard division, and they had what they called a regular division.
So it was a racial division?
It was. It supposedly had to do with how well you spoke the language, because there were kids who spoke what they called pidgin English, and so it was really a mixture. We mm-hmm. had all kinds of, I had all kinds of kids in my classes, and of course there were kids from many different racial backgrounds there.
Mm-hmm.
They used to call me, kids would call me Blondie because my hair was light, and in the sun it got even lighter.
But about like my color, or what mine was when I was younger?
Yeah.
Sort of a light blonde.
Light, yeah. Uh-huh. And you know, I just didn't think too much about it. I just thought it was interesting. But these were just kids. Eighth grade.
Yeah. Well, I think you told me once, because it was after the war, but this is obviously even true now, that there was a lot of Japanese Americans there. Was that
yes.
the case? So you'd had, and that was after the war. Was that a kind of tense at all?
I don't
that?
Think so, because, see, the Japanese Americans were not incarcerated or anything in Hawaii. They right. were they were allowed to live their lives
mm-hmm.
as best they could during the war. So they were able to go on with their businesses and all of those things, and not like it was here in the United States where they were, you know, uprooted
and all that.
Imprisoned and all of that sort of thing. And I remember I belonged to a Y teen group, and we had some older Japanese American guys there, and we would, you know, have dances, go to dances together, and that kind of thing.
And that
and,
wasn't considered.
And Kailua was had a lot of agriculture there too.
Mm-hmm.
They grew bananas and different things. So some of those families, I'm sure, had been there. these young people that I knew were all first generation, I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah. But we had people from many different backgrounds. You know, there were a lot of Portuguese kids in the class because Portuguese had come there primarily as sailors, I think, and and maybe also working on the plantations.
Stuff,
there
were
a lot of, in the islands in those days, lots of pineapple and sugar cane were grown. Those were the mainstays.
So, but it was pretty, like you said, you had dances and stuff, so it wasn't like segregated in that way? Okay,
no.
I mean, I'm just curious, I'd never asked you before.
No, it really.
It didn't even occur to me until we thought about it.
When I went to high school, it might have been a little bit more, because there was only one English standard high school on Oahu, in Honolulu, Roosevelt High School. So those of us, and of course the kids who were in these, in that division of classes were the kids who were hopefully college bound.
Right.
Not all of them,
right.
But a lot of them were. And a lot of those Asian American kids definitely were going to go on to school. And most of them probably to the University of Hawaii.
Because that was the university.
But they were, you know, very conscientious students. And the problem with that then is that, you're all funneling into a school, but you're coming from all over. So it's really hard to establish friendships because you don't live near these kids necessarily.
Right, because you were on the other side of the
mountain. By then, we did move into, they finally, you know, after the war, started building houses. There's huge housing shortage after the war.
You told me, because you couldn't build houses during the war.
Yeah,
in the United States, you couldn't use the materials to build houses,
right.
Which is such an odd thought. But yeah, so you couldn't build.
True. Yeah. So it was a while after World War II before they started building homes again.
So then they built one. So then you had.
We moved in closer to Honolulu.
Honolulu proper.
But I'd sometimes get a ride to school, generally with my dad. In fact, he carpooled for a while, so I'd ride with all these guys on their way to Neil Libby, and then take buses, you know, three different buses to get home.
Oh.
And that was it. You sort of had your friendships at school, but then you didn't see those people. My best friend I met at a Y camp, I think, and she lived just a couple of miles away, but she went to Punahou, which was a private school there.
So let me ask you about, you came to California to go to university, right? So you went to Pomona College in Claremont, which is not that far from where we are here now. And that's where you met Dad.
Yes.
But I want to ask you just a little bit about that, because, I mean, what was that like, just keeping with this theme of coming there? It's a pretty small, I mean, it's one of four colleges in that cluster there, but it's a pretty small private college. It's fairly, I think it's pretty expensive. I had that feeling. Not a public school.
Right.
So I don't know what the campus was like, whether it was diverse, and I don't know about the community. We know from Dad's stories that it was, at least when he was growing up, an incredibly segregated community, and that there was pretty serious discrimination. I mean, that the schools were segregated, that it was sort of like the Jim Crow South, which most people don't think about in California, and certainly not towards Mexicans, you know, maybe in Texas or something, right? I'm just curious, were you aware of any of that?
Not at all. I came to California probably never having heard a word of Spanish in my life. You know, took 4 years of Latin in high school, which was not taught as a spoken language.
Right.
Arrived at Pomona College, and, you know, we're talking this. I graduated in high school in 1950. I did not come to school until the next year. I was just 17, and I think your grandparents very wisely didn't think I was ready to send across the ocean to school. And they actually, I went back east and stayed with your Aunt Dolly for a month, couple of months, and then came back at Christmas time. And meantime, Vi and Daddy stopped by Pomona College. She knew of it.
Because she'd been an educator, right? She was a high school teacher or something?
She had taught speech and drama at the University of Washington. And she had some good friends who'd gone to Pomona. I'd also applied to Reed and a couple of other small schools, which is where I needed to be, in a small residential school. But, you know, anything you read about college in the 50s was you were just, especially a small school, like you were just in your own little cocoon.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I had Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
We went to a restaurant, some of the women in the dormitory. We lived in dormitories, freshmen and juniors mm-hmm. lived together. And you had a junior suite mate who was sort of that kind of thing. And so several of us went, they took us to a Mexican restaurant. I should remember the name of it, but I don't. And that was the first time I ever had Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, didn't know how to pronounce street names and things. But of course, in Claremont, that wasn't a problem because you had Yale and Harvard and first and second and third. Anyway, I proceeded to study French.
Yeah.
Took a year of French, struggled with it a little bit because I didn't want to have to sit and memorize things. And then I thought, well, I don't think I'm going to take any more of this. I would go home during the summer. I did have a friend in the dorm named Gloria Gonzalez, and learned many years later that she didn't that your dad knew her. She was from Claremont.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't grow up in the barrio
right.
where he was. It was in the one over on the east side of town.
Uh-huh.
And she was such fun, and I liked her so much. But I also remember that she had to change roommates.
Because somebody didn't want to live with her.
And I was just stunned with that. Because, you know, I'd come from Lewiston where didn't have to even think about that, and went to Hawaii where you really didn't have to think about it too much either, which was just the opposite side of the coin.
Right.
And then to be in this situation and see that happening.
Sounds like it was very disturbing.
The only black students we had were, exchange students from the black colleges. There usually a couple of those.
Interesting.
Black American.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Black schools.
Yeah.
Fisk. We used to have students from Fisk. I don't think we had any Asian American students that I can remember.
Mm-hmm. Which in California doesn't surprise me for that time period.
We're 5 years after the war. Right. It's over 5 or 6 years after World War II.
Yeah.
I loved Pomona. It was very happy time for me.
Can you talk a little bit about meeting Dad and how you ended up?
Yeah, well, you know, my junior year, I went back to Hawaii
mm-hmm.
and lived at home, which wasn't much fun after I'd been away, and took the bus to the university.
Helped, yeah.
Had a wonderful educational year there. Enjoyed that very much. Had good classes, good professors, but I just couldn't wait to get back to Pomona. Your great grandma had passed away. Actually, a few years before, and she had left money and, you know, small amount to all the grandchildren.
Uh-huh.
And so Bai said to me, well, honey, you know, you could finish up here at the university and then take a trip to, you know, who knows where with that money. Or if you really want to go back to Pomona, you can spend the money on that.
So you spent your inheritance.
Does that sound like I?
Yeah.
Not in control, but in control. So, boy, a week after I got out of school, I came back. And so I was going to summer school and taking some classes in Claremont. And that's when I met your dad.
When you were working at the fountain?
Well, no, that was another, yeah. In my first or second year, I spent a little bit of time working, because I'd done this before, in a little restaurant cafe in Claremont, you know, just serving coffee and that kind of thing in the evenings. And mm-hmm. I didn't do it for very long, I don't think. But one night I'm in there, and there's this guy there, it looks like he's about 15 years old, except he's got on a suit and shirt and tie. He's got some papers and stuff. And then I realized these young teenagers were coming in and calling. They were greeting one another and calling him Mr. Martinez. And I thought, oh, well, I guess maybe he's a teacher. He doesn't look old enough to be a teacher. And I don't remember talking to him. I guess I was serving him coffee. I don't know. But I just didn't like his attitude. And that was the only encounter I had. And then here, two or three years later, my friend Carolyn says, oh, somebody wants you to meet. He says, his name's Pat Martinez. See, she'd met both of them, and she'd gotten the names confused. Your Uncle Pat and your dad.
Pat was a freshman at that time, right?
Yeah.
That's what you think. Okay.
Right. So I'm looking, she's pointing out your dad across the way, and I looked over there, and I said, I don't know who that guy is, but I don't want to meet him. Well, eventually, we did meet. And we dated, for that summer and that whole semester. And then I thought, I'm going to be graduating in June. I guess I better figure out what I'm going to do with my life. So I decided, your grandma, Elizabeth, was in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Your mom.
Mom. So I thought, I guess I'll go back to New York City and, crash into the publishing world or something.
An English major.
You're right. I mean, the most bizarre thing, I think about that now, and I thought, good God, what was I thinking? But who knows? Anyway, and then I think it was probably January, maybe January, February, whenever. It was probably in the end of January. I just taken a final in history final or something. And your dad and I were out. And he turned to me and he said, oh, I told my mom we're going to get married. I've never let him live that down. I just tell him, you never really proposed to me. But I understood what he was saying because, as you know, he was teaching, he was living at home, and he was supporting all his
younger
Pat and Lupi and
Richard
and Marciano.
Yeah.
So he was their sole support.
Yeah.
So, of course, it was something he had to discuss with his mother, and she
gave him her blessing.
No.
They weren't picking anymore at that point. Okay.
Yeah.
So how is that for you to come into this family? Now, you must have met them.
I had met your grandma. In fact, that's another interesting story. We were supposed to be going to a formal dance at the college, and your dad told me that that was in the fall. And then at last minute, he said, oh, I can't. I have to take my mom and my aunt to a football game. And we were talking about that recently, and I finally said, it wasn't even your brother Pat that was playing. It was Larry, his cousin, Larry Armendariz, who ended up going to Pomona College. And he and Lupi were classmates, so Larry was a senior. So we go traipsing, all of us, cozy little car, all the way to Brawley or
some place.
The end of the world to see this football game. And I, have never thought much about football.
So that was like his family commitment.
But
he had to drive. Right?
Yeah, and I got to meet his mom. And,
Tia Carmen.
And, of course, Tia Carmen, just bubbly, warm, friendly, and spoke English pretty well. And conversed, however she had to do it, she did it. Whereas your grandma was much more quiet. And I think probably spoke English pretty well, but didn't speak it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my, I think Lupi went with us too. So that was my really getting to know the family. And then the other funny story, and I heard this last week at your Uncle Pat's 75th birthday, they were talking to your dad and saying, yes, we were just so pleased you were marrying Bobby. And Pat said, yeah, we were so glad it wasn't the other one, because she used to come down to eat all the time, and she was just hanging around all the time, my friend Carolyn.
So they were calling her the grandota because
she was much taller. So my, your grandma said to your dad when he said he was going to get married, she said, la grandota or la chiquita? And Pat said, yeah, we were really delighted. It was La Chiquita.
So you want to talk a little bit more about being married and coming into this family? Like, obviously, there was language differences, cultural, religion.
Yes. Food, just everything, yeah. Religion. I had this little town I lived in, Lewiston, had a Catholic church and a Presbyterian church. And I guess a Methodist church, you know, all these little tiny towns had lots of churches. And I never went to the Catholic church, but spent time Episcopalian. I sang in the Episcopalian choir for a while.
Really?
I went to the Presbyterian, you know, Sunday school. My parents were not churchgoers. So I really had no religious
grandma
background.
Grandma was a Methodist?
Methodist.
Yeah, and she was kind of strict about stuff, right?
My grandma.
Your grandmother,
my
yes.
grandma.
No cards and that kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes, we didn't play cards on Sunday and a few things like that.
So you became
but
a Catholic.
But my aunts, my dad's sisters, at one point left one church and went to another because they wanted to be able to dance and do things that were not supposedly, that were frowned upon in whatever church they were going to at the time. But I did, when I was in Hawaii, Vi got us involved in the Methodist church there, mm-hmm. and your brother and I...
Your brother.
My brother, excuse me, your Uncle Herb, who had never been, neither one of us has been baptized. We were baptized and confirmed in the Methodist Church. I was probably about 13 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, you know, we were part of the youth group. And,
yeah.
you know.
As much a social thing as anything.
And my, you know, Nana was a Methodist, and mm-hmm. I think that I think Vi probably was thinking about that, too, and knew that would make her happy.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then we had John Ed, too.
Right.
Can't forget him, my wonderful little half-brother who was born when I was about 16.
So, but when you married Dad, then you became a Catholic, and you're
right.
still an active practicing.
Very active in the church, and it's been a big part of our life. And, of course, as we were saying at this birthday party last week, I made a point of telling a couple of your aunts that, you know, I just felt so welcomed by your dad's family, always welcomed. Isabel had a shower for us. I remember I had a class that night, and your dad came to pick me up, and we finally got there after everybody had been there for a few hours, you know, and Isabel had fixed this wonderful food dinner for everybody, and that's when I got to meet most of the brothers and sisters, and everybody brought gifts, and it was just
so, it's like,
so
oh,
nice.
I guess eight of them, right?
Yes. And when Elizabeth was baptized, your dad pretty much had selected someone that he taught with in Riverside to be the godparents. And then Isabel and Joe invited us over after the baptism, and she fixed this wonderful meal for us, and Joe played the guitar, and, you know, just very wonderful things like that. And, of course, at that point, it was unusual to have someone, I didn't know this, out of the family
to be a godparent.
You always had someone in the family
right.
do that.
Yeah.
So I years later, I felt a little badly about that, but that's
you didn't
one
know,
of the
you
things
didn't even realize.
I did not know.
Yeah, yeah, you didn't realize.
And I was baptized and confirmed after Leanne was born.
Mm.
In fact, the two priests, in those days, you had two priests in the parish, and one of them was a chaplain, you know, at our hospital up there, and they both came in to visit me, and they closed the door, and they said, okay, we got her now. She's flat on her back. She can't say no.
Well, I'm just thinking about anything else. What about Spanish in terms of, like, not, and being able to communicate? Because obviously all the siblings could speak English, but I can't even remember that well how much Grandma spoke, because it seems like
yeah.
she spoke to me in Spanish a fair amount, and we just
probably
figured it
so.
Out.
Probably so, and I think you did, and that's certainly what Elizabeth remembers, is, you know, being there making tortillas with Grandma and always being able to communicate, and I think you're right. I think it was mostly in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she and I, you know, would have brief conversations occasionally, but, you know, there was just so many, there were so many people around, so many kids around.
Always,
and,
huh?
Yes. But wonderful, wonderful family get-togethers. And see, I had grown up in a situation where I just sort of spent a lot of time by myself, you know, especially after your grandma went to work.
Right.
Well, we were there in Lewiston
yeah.
during the war, and she was a service club hostess at Fort Niagara. So she worked, you know, midday
evening.
Until late
yeah.
at night. So Herb and I were just sort of on our own, and, you know, he was a teenager. He was out doing his thing. So you know, just having this whole big, wonderful family was just amazing to me. And I had, you remember my boss, former boss, who was married to a man who spoke French, said to me one time, does it ever bother you that you know, that they're speaking Spanish and maybe you can't understand them and they might be talking about you? And I was just stunned. I said, of course not. They would never do that. And yet, she obviously had a little bit of that feeling about her relationship with her French-speaking relatives that she didn't see very often. And, of course, my biggest failure in life, I think, is the fact that I never really learned how to speak Spanish. You know, I went to night classes, went to your dad's night class, went to Stan Bellamy's night class. And
you understand most of it, though.
Well, I hate to say I do, because then you know, you get stuck.
You're proved wrong, right?
And, of course, we spent 6 months in Spain on sabbatical, and I thought, oh, boy, I'm going to learn. And the Spaniards, bless their hearts, will correct me on the way I pronounced Martinez, because I didn't lisp on the G, and they did that, you know, just a few little things like that, and it just destroyed me. But that's my problem. What I realize now is that people who are successful in languages are the ones who just talk and don't worry about it, and people who are speaking another language are usually so thrilled that you're even trying. Yeah. That they don't care, you know, but here I am, the English major, you know, it's got to come out just perfectly.
Yeah.
And so that's, just never did it.
Yeah.
Well, at least.
Well, I want to ask you just a little bit about going back to the family thing, because, I mean, you know, Grandma's house always had, even if we just went there, we did pretty regularly. We went a couple times a month, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah. There was always, you know, a pot of mole on the stove. And always just people coming through and all our cousins. And I'm thinking almost, so there was 8 siblings, and almost every single one of those had at least 2 kids and most about 5 or more. I mean, you look at, you know, Christina with her 9 or whatever. And but, you know, we had 6. So there was always a lot of kids, a lot of people and stuff like that. And you said that was different for you. How did that feel? I mean, I don't know how to ask you more about it, but I'm just wondering, maybe you can talk a little bit more about how. I mean, it seems like it was something you welcomed.
It was. I just enjoyed the companionship, and I knew that you children just loved being with your cousins and had such fun. And I, you know, remember spending time with my cousins,
right.
Jack and his brothers in Buffalo, you know, maybe once or twice a year, and what fun that was. And so, yeah, it was just wonderful. And as I say, I always felt accepted and loved. And, you know, one time Isabel made Easter dresses for Elizabeth and Leanne. And and everybody was just, I felt so welcoming. And I just felt like I was part of the family. And as I said last week, you were just the perfect person for Daniel. And we all knew that.
So it was a great match.
And I'd never heard that before.
Wow.
And here we are coming up on our 55th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
So.
Must have worked out.
I guess.
I want to just ask something. In terms of having us kids, so there's 6 of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, you know, we definitely are bicultural, most of us bilingual. Through some work, often from our dad, because he was our high school teacher. Well, we didn't learn in the house. We learned our accents in school. Did you ever put much thought into sort of how it might be for us to be from these 2 different cultures, or at all? Was it ever
on occasion? I did, because Elizabeth, primarily, you know,
firstborn,
our oldest child, would come home just really upset and relate about incidents where she felt that she was definitely being discriminated against.
And again, this is in a small town, because we live up in Lake Arrowhead, a small mountain community, predominantly white, almost exclusively white. I suppose Dad was one of the first people of color that lived up there, right?
Yeah. And I remember we were driving down the street one day, and this high school kid, as we went by, saw your dad and yelled, "Beaner!" And I never heard the term before, beaner.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, what's that about? And he just said, okay.
Kind of surprised Dad didn't run him over. So
But, yeah, your dad was He's very sensitive, and yet I remember getting into a thing at church one time with some people, and the next time we saw this guy, my husband saying, "Well, hi, how are you today?" And I am just absolutely stone-faced. I go, "How can you talk to those people?" And he said, "You just rise above it. Don't lower yourself to that. You just rise above it, smile, be polite, and move on."
Which is how he's lived his life since he had been young and had to deal with really serious stuff.
Yeah, he learned that. And I, never had to deal with that kind of thing and didn't know how to do it.
But, I want to say something to you for the record. I feel like you've always had a very strong sense of speaking out against injustice of any kind. And I think that the combination of the two, his experiential and like you don't put, you confront it if it comes at you.
Yes.
But yours to feel that about any kind of injustice. And I feel like you really instilled that in us. And I think that we've tried, at least, I think, as kids, to live our life that way. And I think that was a nice balancing point because you had that big view, mm-hmm. and that you could see it and that you could name all kinds of discrimination in a way that I think allowed us to sort of see that and, again, speak out against different kinds of injustice.
Yes. When I first met your dad and he started telling me some of those stories, I was just aghast about them. Getting to swim in the swimming pool on the day the pool was cleaned. I mean, the kind of things that we would hear about what happened to the black children in the South. And I thought, here, this, and sitting in the back of the theater and all those, or certain days, all those kinds of things. And having just come from Hawaii, I can still remember the evening that he started telling me those things. I was just stunned to think that anybody had to live like that.
I think we're probably almost done. Thank you, Mom. I really
thank
appreciate
you.
I hadn't heard some of those stories.
I'm so glad we did this.
I know.
I thought it was going to be very difficult.
Not at all, though, huh?
No.
It was
not when we're speaking to someone we love.
Likewise.